Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Literally an institution in this town of digging up old photos, old stories, collections, everything you can imagine under the sun about this great city.
Greasy spoons, dives, old clubs.
If you love this city, you're going to love it even more.
Real people, real stories, real places.
This is the Austin Found Podcast.
Welcome back to the show. We appreciate you guys tuning in to Austin Found. I'm J.B. Hager.
And I'm Michael Barnes.
We're with the Austin American Statesman. And when you talk about historical things, inevitably you're going to be talking about churches.
Right.
At the timing of this recording, as we're getting into summer 2021, I also cover a lot of cycling. And they talk about churches that were built in the 4th century.
In Europe, yes.
But for Austin, you know, something that's 150 plus years old is old and iconic. And one of those is the Wesley United Methodist Church.
That's correct. And it could even claim to be 175 years old because at first, the first Methodist Church had black members who worshipped in the basement of the church on Congress Avenue. And the white members worshipped in the sacristy. But Wesley United Methodist Church is an African-American split off from the First Methodist. And in at the time that I wrote the story in 2015, it was 150 years old. So it was born right at the end of the Civil War, right along the time of emancipation, and has a very illustrious history.
And where does this church
currently exists? It's in East Austin at St. Bernard Street and Hackberry. It's a beautiful church, buff bricks, built in 1929. And earlier versions of the church were downtown and were, one of them was like across the street from the current First Baptist Church on Trinity there. Mm-hmm. So it was a downtown church for a very long time.
And then Why the split offs?
Well, first of all, of the different,
because it split off into several churches. What used to be congregate there,
right? Well, one of the things is that the African American congregations that were Methodist split into several groups, as did the Methodists, and they included the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church, and the Christian Methodist Episcopal Church. Wesley, once integration began in the 1960s in earnest, it rejoined the main Methodist Church, the United Methodist Church. And so it's part of the larger integrated Methodist denomination.
In your article, you also described it at one time, and this is what you were told, and if you can explain this to me, before it was known for singing, mm-hmm. it was considered a shouting church, and right. then later more of a silk stocking church. What do those two mean?
Well, if you think of a Black Baptist church, they have the call and response going on, and people exclaiming their affirmation of what the preacher is saying or whoever is talking. And according to interviewees, the Wesley used to be like that. And and they also used to be a place that sang traditional gospel songs, which grew out of the songs of slavery. And then by the middle of the 20th century, it had become a silk stocking church, which means it was an upper-class church. It was the church of the well-to-do. And it's located on Sugar Hill, which has been a well-to-do African-American neighborhood in East Austin.
What a great name. Sugar Hill.
I love it.
And we'll talk more about the future of Sugar Hill in just a second. Let's elaborate a little bit more. You spent some time talking to their music ministry director, LaMonica Lewis, about the importance of music in the church.
Absolutely. It has been part of the tradition for a very long time. For a while, the gospel songs went out of favor there, but they're coming back. And more recent pastors have encouraged that. Any kind of music. I mean, they're not confined to one particular genre.
Obviously, when you think about the location and the connection today, it goes way back, a tie to Samuel Houston College.
Right. When Samuel Houston College moved from Dallas to Austin, the first place where it held classes was at Wesley when it was downtown. And they maintained very strong connections to Houston. And then when Houston merged with Tillotson and became what is now Houston-Tillotson University, the ties remained. And some of the major figures in Houston-Tillotson history were members of Wesley's congregation.
What was going on at this church during the civil rights movement, which it's come up. If you want to go through some of our previous episodes, we've talked about what Austin was like during that time on a couple of occasions.
Many of the leaders of the civil rights movement were members of this church. We have talked about some of them, the Lott family, and many, many others. So it was a place where leaders of the community gathered. So it's been a long time beacon in East Austin. And continues to be.
And there have been many, many notable members that were regulars at this church. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Well, there are members of former Austin City Council member Ora Houston's family, William Charles Akins, the namesake for Akins High School. He was also the principal when Anderson High School moved over to the west side. Theodore Youngblood, who was a head waiter at the Driscoll and Stephen F. Austin hotels, and the members of the King family, which is associated with the main African-American funeral home, King Tears Mortuary.
And at the time that you wrote this, the pastor was Sylvester E. Chase Jr., and I thought it was interesting how they serve one-year terms.
Yeah, I didn't know that until this story.
I've never heard of that type of set arrangement, I should call it.
It is. The Methodist Church, I grew up Catholic. The Methodist Church has a lot of democracy in it. The higher-ups in the church will decide who's going to be the pastor, but in consultation with the congregation. And it's not forever. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a pastor at St. Vincent de Paul in Houston that had gotten on in his years, and they had to forcibly remove him. It's not going to go. I mean, it was big news, too. I mean, everybody knew what was going on. But the Methodists have a pretty thoughtful approach to picking their leaders.
I thought that was very interesting. And I think that's a great model.
Yes.
If you're going to start a church, you might want to look at this model. And then let's go back to Sugar Hill one last thing, because, gosh, I mean, even just in the last 2 years, the landscape of East Austin has been under dramatic change. You know, tell me what it's like right around the church.
Right.
How is that going to be affected? And members moving away. There's a lot of African-Americans heading out into the burbs.
Right.
What's it look like?
It puts a lot of stress and pressure on the churches, the legacy churches, because people want to come back to the church of their family and their youth. But if you're living in Pflugerville or Bastrop or Cedar Park, getting there and back is tough. And people are willing to do that Sunday morning, but they don't really want to come back Sunday evening for any, you know, whatever
social or midweek Bible study or
any of that stuff becomes a problem, and it hasn't really been solved. And that's actually true as well for legacy white churches and Latino churches. Mm-hmm. Is how do you get those now scattered congregants back to the home church? But as for the neighborhood, there has been significant changes as close as a block away, especially on 11th Street and Rosewood. But the actual few blocks on St. Bernard that Wesley is on have been really well preserved. I expect there to be, at some point, some sort of Sugar Hill Historic District form, just as there have been nearby with the Holy Cross District, mm-hmm. which we talked about on a previous show. Because one of the smart things that Wesley did was to buy up land around them to protect that. And one of them is a bungalow that houses Six Square, which is the African American Cultural District. It's a nonprofit that is trying to maintain not just the physical culture of East Austin, but also the ways that people interact and so forth. So Wesley's been a leader in that area.
It's the first time I've heard the Sugar Hill District referenced. I wasn't familiar with it, and I love the name. And you made a brief mention of how some of these churches are doing some satellite efforts out to where some of their maybe former congregation is, but to engage them in maybe midweek or other things like that we just discussed, but then they might come in on Sunday morning.
I'm surprised that they're not exchanges. This has always confounded me. Most churches are only being used, the main body of the church building is only being used one day a week.
Mm-hmm.
Why are those not being shared among the different denominations? I've never understood that. And I think if you could have something at a suburban Methodist church so that people who are part of the Wesley legacy community could meet there at other times, that would be ideal to me.
I said this on a fairly recent podcast. You're starting to solve problems around the city.
I haven't solved anything yet. but I listen to people, and I listen to what they think might work and share that.
You do have a unique position. Now that I think about it, I mean, you've talked to, over your 30-plus year career, you've talked to people from every walk of life on every part of the city. Most people don't do that. That's why I said I've never heard of Sugar Hill, right? You get that viewpoint of
I'm very lucky.
Everybody.
I'm very lucky, and part of it, we've talked about this before. See, you're speeding by on your bike. I'm walking. So I get to talk to the people along the way and hear their stories, and I get to look at places and think about them and wonder what happened there before and what was there before, so...
Well, all that thought makes for a great podcast. Thank you very much, Michael Barnes. If people want to reach out to you, they can.
mbarnes@statesman.com.
Or jhager, H-A-G-E-R, @statesman.com. That story was out of Volume 2, Chapter 3 of Indelible Austin.
That's right. And don't forget, if you're interested in broader Texas history, we have the free weekly newsletter, digital newsletter, called Think Texas, and if you Google Think Texas, it'll come up right away. And I just got back from a Think Texas trip.
And where'd you go?
I went to Stephenville and Glen Rose and Thurber, and there are three towns within about 30 miles of each other northwest of here, and picked up a lot of great historical information in those places.
Very cool.
So Think Texas.
Well, thank you everyone for tuning in to Austin Found.
Happy trails.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.